Today's gospel is one that's familiar to all of us. We've all heard it before, the feeding of the 5,000. But if we let it just remain that story we've heard over and over again, we might miss something. Because when he performed this amazing miracle, Jesus didn't just feed 5,000 men, and by the way, all the women and children who were there too. But he also taught us something very important, something vitally important about himself. In fact, in this miracle, he is revealing to us who he truly is. So imagine this scene for the moment. Jesus and his disciples, they're kind of tired. They've been working hard. They climb a mountain to get some rest. But a large crowd is following them. And this big, large crowd, it's hungry. Everybody's hungry. So Jesus sees them. And he's moved with pity for them. And he desires to feed them. Imagine what the look on the disciples' faces were when they saw that Jesus was about to feed them. I mean, if I was there, I'd be thinking, no way, dude. This is supposed to be a break, I thought. But no. Jesus sends his disciples back out to find out, does anyone have food? And so they look through the vast multitude of people there. And they only manage to find one kid who has 5 loaves and 2 fish. You know, I guess they weren't big on planning their day trips in those days. Maybe they expected there to be a falafel stand nearby or something. I don't know. 5 loaves and 2 fish is all they could find. So the disciples don't think that's enough. But Jesus starts anyway. He says a prayer of thanksgiving. And he distributes the food to the people. And they eat as much as they want. And yet there are still 12 wicker baskets when they're full. Now something I didn't notice until this last week actually was that it says Jesus gives thanks. Jesus prays before his meals just like we do. He does it in public and everything. I thought that was pretty cool. Anyways, side tangent over. This miracle, it probably reminds us of some other things we've read in the Bible. For example, when God saw the vast multitude of his people coming out of Egypt, and they were hungry. They were wandering around in the desert. So he fed them manna and sent them quail. They could eat all they wanted. But, like the gospel today, they couldn't take the leftovers with them. There are so many parallels between the two readings. And the Jews probably recognized these parallels. Unfortunately, they probably saw Jesus more as Moses, who asked for the food, than God, who provided the food. But they definitely recognized he was something like Moses. And then in the first reading today, we heard about another feeding, the prophet Elisha, who was the successor to Elijah. He was one of the greatest prophets of Israel. And Elisha fed a couple hundred people with 20 barley loaves. Now, I'm not saying that's not impressive, but thousands of people with 5 or a couple hundred with 20, I think I know who the bigger deal is. So they recognize that he's something like Elisha, the great prophet, but yet he is something better. So they recognize we got Moses, we got the great prophet, so they want to make him king. Seems logical. The problem is they wanted to make him a worldly king. And Jesus wasn't all about that because he's not of this world. So he withdrew to the mountain to pray. And if you notice, his disciples didn't come with him this time. I guess he left them down there for crowd control. Who knows? So that yet again, they don't get a break. So when they're finally done, the disciples get on a boat. They start crossing the sea. And that's kind of where the gospel leaves us off today. I imagine those disciples were exhausted, and yet they still had to row a bunch of miles to get home. Great. So like I said, we kind of stop there. But I think the next few verses in John's gospel that we don't read really help us understand what's going on in this story. They help us understand the whole point of it. Because so far what we've learned is Jesus is like Moses. Jesus is like Elijah. But there's more. So let's put our imaginations back to work. I'll set the scene for you for the next few verses, where Jesus performs three more miracles. It's night out. The gospel says it was dark. And we join the 12 disciples in their boat. And surely they're exhausted because they've already rowed 3 or 4 miles. On top of that, the Sea of Galilee has been stirred up because there's a heavy wind. The Sea of Galilee, when it's windy and nighttime, it gets pretty angry. Don't recommend boating on the Sea of Galilee when it's windy and dark out. It's just a bad time. So the disciples are out there. They're tired. They're exhausted. The weather's bad. And they're a little bit afraid. But then all of a sudden, they see a guy walking on the water. And then they recognize this guy, and it's Jesus. So they freak out even more, because who walks on water? But Jesus says, "It is I. Don't be afraid." And then the storm calms down. And then, somehow, they are immediately transported to where they're going. No more rowing. Man, if I was on that boat, I think that would be the happiest part of that whole trip. No more rowing. But in case you didn't catch all three of those miracles, the first one, Jesus walked on water. The second one, the storm calmed down. And the third one, they immediately arrived at where they were going. And so these miracles tell us one more really important thing about Jesus. And that critical thing, it tells us, it changes everything that we've read in John's Gospel so far, and everything we will read in John's Gospel in the weeks to come. In that first miracle, by walking on the water, Jesus does something totally unique. In all of history, Jewish or otherwise, nobody walks on water. You've got Moses and Elijah walking on dry land. God parts the water for them, but they don't get to walk on the water. The only person to do that ever is Jesus. Something greater than Moses and Elijah is here. And then in the second miracle, Jesus calms the storm. He has direct power over nature. If you look through the Old Testament, we do see prophets who can pray for droughts or rain. Specifically, Elijah does that. But they never have direct control to just stop the rain or start it. The Jewish people knew that only God could control nature in such a way. Only God would be able to walk on water. Only God would be able to control the weather like that. And the disciples were good Jewish people. They knew that if Jesus was doing this, after all they had seen that day with the multiplication of the loaves, with the walking on the water and the calming of the storm, this Jesus guy could only be one thing, and that thing was God. Jesus is God. And so they were afraid, because every time someone in the Bible meets God, their first response is to be afraid. It's like a textbook formula. But what happens after that? What does God always say to someone who's afraid of Him? He says, "Be not afraid. It is I." And what does Jesus say to them? Exactly that. He says, "It is I. Do not be afraid." He tells them, "It's me. It's your friend, Jesus. Yes, now you have recognized who I truly am. But don't be afraid, because I'm here with you always." And then he demonstrates how much he loves them and how much he cares for them, how much he knows what they desire, because they don't have to row anymore. They immediately get to where they're going. These miracles, the feeding of the 5,000, the walking on the water, the calming of the storm, and the immediate arrival, they're here for one important reason. And that's so that we know who Jesus is. We know that Jesus is God. Therefore, Jesus has the same authority as God, because He's God. And we need to know that Jesus has this authority, that He is God, because what's coming next in John's gospel is going to be hard to understand, and it's going to be hard to accept. And what's next in John's gospel is the homily he gives people the next day. And all those people who were there listening that day, almost every single one of them left afterwards. Really, the only ones who didn't were those 12 disciples who saw him on the boat that night, who knew absolutely that Jesus was God, that he had the authority of God. If they hadn't known that, they very well could have left too. And so for the next four Sundays, we're going to be reading that very hard-to-understand teaching. We're going to slowly work our way through it. But luckily, we have the same advantage as the disciples. We know who Jesus is. We know that He is God. We know that Jesus is the second person of the Trinity, the Son of God, the divine Word. Jesus took on our human form and became one of us. We know that not only does this mean that we received a great gift, a gift the angels could only dream of, by the way, because God never became an angel, He became a human. We not only know that Jesus became human for us, but we know that He has the authority over all creation, because He's also God. And so how did Jesus use this authority for us? He used it to give us Himself in the Eucharist. He used it to give His apostles the authority to forgive sins, that same authority that's been passed down through the generations and is now the sacrament of confession. And He used that authority when He died on the cross to open the gates of heaven for us so that all of us who choose to follow Him can follow Him into heaven and be saved. So let's do our best to follow Jesus.